Okay, how you doing, Reg?
Boy, I don't know how this happens with this microphone. I know I say it every week, but Jesus. All right, it's supposed to be there. There's a notch there, too. Okay, are we ready to go? I am. How about you, Reggie? Good. All right, let's get all set. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown. Give me the music. I'll give you a podcast. Put it in the book. Number 423. All right. Star, smile, strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And, of course, as I advise you every week, listening is important, but getting out there and being an advocate for this podcast is just as important. Just as me, but a real close second. So get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you like what you hear, because if you do, we got stuff for you. Go to WGNradio.com, go to the prompt for this podcast, click it. And then prepare. You will just be inundated. You will be confronted by podcast after podcast after podcast. Just load down and keep scrolling. Scroll down, load more. Scroll down, load more. There's years worth in there. We've been doing this since May of 2016. That's why this is episode number 423. So here we are in the midst of summer, right? I mean, it is summer now. This podcast is posting on July 1st. I mean, it's summer. We can't deny it. In fact, the first month of summer has already sped by. Yes, I know the summer solstice is the 20th or the 21st, whichever, and that's the official day of summer. But I always tell you that I go by the meteorological beginning of summer. Big fan of Tom Skilling. He always mentioned meteorological summer. June 1st is meteorological summer. And I really believe that that makes most sense, because summer is June. Let's face it, right? Not the end of June, the beginning of June. Granted, some schools are still in session at the beginning of June. More and more schools, colleges certainly, high schools, and even some grammar schools getting out earlier and earlier, some in late May, and some early June. We'll maybe give you that. But by now, By June 21st, everybody's out of school. It's already summer, but they still go by this solstice. That's fine. I judge summer by those main 3 months, your Junes, your Julys, and your Augusts. September, even though it's still 90 degrees many times in September, at least here in the Chicago area, that's autumn. I wish we would get 3 years of, or 3 months of autumn. I wish we would get September, October, November of autumn. It's my favorite time of the year. It's my favorite temperatures of the year in those nice 60s and 50s. Oh, I love that. Beautiful fall day with the sun out and the breeze. Oh, nice little chill in the air. God, I love that. Not a fan of the heat. We've been having a heat wave here in the Midwest, in the Chicago area, as many people would assume. You've experienced some heat. It's been all over the country. I don't know where you're listening, but if you're in the Chicago area, you know that we have had a brutal week of heat. And so, and we're still not done with it yet. And we've only begun, right? But it is, because right now in June, July and August is when it really gets hot. So we've already We've had a taste of that already. I can only imagine what's going to happen in August. But wow, yeah, it's been hot. But it is, in my mind, one way or the other right now, it's summer. We're in the summer. We're in the throes of summer. Usually, over the last 40 years, if not longer, I would even argue 50 years, almost 50 years ago, summer began to be defined not only by the warming of the weather, not only by the sound of gloves hitting leather and gloves hitting wood because it's baseball season. That was always the first rites of spring, right? That's how you knew summer was here. Baseball started. Now, as I said a few podcasts ago, in the sporting world, baseball does not, well, it's certainly a very popular sport, don't get me wrong. And it's a summer sport, yes. And there's nothing nicer, at least in my view, hopefully in a lot of other people's views, so baseball doesn't go out of fashion. But you're sitting at a ballpark and watching a game. I know in today's world it's difficult. People don't have the attention span. But if you have a little patience, if you enjoy just chilling out, watching a baseball game ain't bad. You can talk to people next to you and maybe not miss something, whereas if you're watching basketball or hockey or football, you got to pay attention every minute. Baseball was made for summer. It's a leisure game, and I know they're trying to speed it up because the younger generation doesn't have the attention span. They like to be, they need constant, sensory stimulation. I get it. I hope they don't change baseball rules too much, because that's the appeal of baseball. Not just the game, it's the atmosphere of the game. And it's a summer game. So yes, what would usher in summer? Not only the change of seasons, the weather, but yes, all of a sudden baseball is back, and that's how you know it's summer. But I would argue too, and that's been going on for hundreds of years, ever since baseball started in the 1800s. But I would argue over the last 50 years, there was another annual event that marked the beginning of summer. And it usually started maybe at the end of May. Memorial Day was always viewed as the unofficial start of summer, because you got that day off. Excuse me, you got that day off, and the weather was usually getting nicer. And so that was the unofficial start of summer, even though, as I said, we had the summer solstice, the mid to late June was officially the start of summer. But I'm going with meteorological. So the Memorial Day weekend wasn't all that far away from the beginning of summer, according to the June 1st kind of calendar of that. But as I said, I would argue in the last 50 years, and that's it's quite a statement when I you say that. It's hard to believe that the mid-70s were 50 years ago. Wow. I mean, for those of us who have been around and who lived in that time, whether you were a little kid or not, that was 50 years ago. Jeez. But there was another beginning of summer, especially the last 40 years in the 80s. But I would argue that it probably started in the 70s, mid to late 70s. And I don't think I get much pushback on that from people that know the industry I'm talking about. Yes, the weather. Yes, baseball. But then something new happened. The summer movie. I've talked about this many times, and I will continue to probably talk about it, because I think it needs to be restated and said and reminded for those of us who've been around that long, and for those who haven't and can't understand or sometimes don't care what happened before them. But you should know about history. You should know about the past. I always say, I always tell you to listen to our older podcasts, so you listen to where we've been so you know where we're going. That's true on a podcast, in my podcast, for instance, because I make references back and forth. But that's a good adage to live by in life. See where you've been so you have a sense of where you might be going. See what's happened in the past. Learn by other people's mistakes and the history so you don't make those same mistakes going forward. Embrace the past. Know the past. Know your history. Well, it's hard for young people today. And I'm not begrudging them. I understand why it would be hard to understand, to fully grasp how geared our culture is to young people's likes and dislikes and preferences. I wouldn't say it's a youth oriented, because I don't mean youthful. I mean youth. I mean young. I don't mean thinking young. I mean being young in ages, in age, in years. Up until, I would say, you know, even including the 60s. The 60s were a major. It wasn't just a generation gap. It was a generational shift. And while it took a little time for it to take hold, its roots started, I would probably even say, in the 40s, or even in the 50s. But it didn't really take hold until the 60s, and then it really became established in the 70s. And in the 80s, it was par for the course. How our culture suddenly shifted from being an adult-oriented culture to a young person's culture. This was, we were living in an adult-oriented culture. Mainly because, if you look at history, before World War II, things were not good. You say, well, you know, what happened? Why have we become a youth-oriented culture? Young persons. I don't mean youthful. Young persons culture. Well, to be honest with you, one of the main reasons is because in the world and in the United States, life was not easy. Life was not fun. The first 40 years, the first 45 years of the 1900s, let's just start at 1900. It's a round number. The first 45 years of the 1900s in this country alone. Let's just look at the United States, because the United States is certainly a trend-setting country, the biggest, largest, the most powerful country in the world. So we because of our dominance, we tend to make the trends. And if we don't make them, we certainly, once we find a trend, we solidify it. We usually overkill it, but we solidify it. When it comes to America and it becomes popular here, it's real. There have been other trends that have happened around the world, but they're not legitimized until they get the U.S. stamp of approval, especially in the pop culture, at least. But think about this. For the first 45 years of the 1900s, we had two world wars and a major depression. An economic depression in the United States. Two world wars, which accounted for great instability in the world in general, accounted for people, you know, young men, especially in both of those wars at that time when the draft was exclusively men fighting. Young men's lives completely uprooted, in many cases men's lives lost before they even got a chance to start. And for those that didn't get drafted into a war and fight and potentially get killed there, their reward was to be living from 1929 until the end of World War II, 1945, a good 15 years in a major depression, an economic depression where there were no jobs. And people were losing their homes, and people couldn't afford to feed their kids. And these were not happy times for anybody, adults or children. They were tough, tough times. Don't get me wrong, not everybody, but for the majority of people, the first 45 years of the 1900s were not that exciting. The world was at a very unstable place in many ways. I'm just using a few major events to use my point, but there, I mean, if you had a history book, I'm sure you could look at those 45 years and pick out 20 or 30 other events. But just majorly, let's just talk at the big ones. You can't get much bigger than a world war, right? So two world wars within a span of 45 years, not one, two world wars and a crippling economic depression in the United States. So not a fun time to be a kid, right? If you're a little kid, your parents don't have that money. They're barely putting clothes on your back. They're not going to be buying you toys or taking you on cool vacations. They're worried about getting food in your belly. And then when you get to your teens, if you're a boy, you want to look forward to getting older. Well, getting older isn't that great. When you turn 18, they draft you. And who knows if you're ever going to come back home. So not a great time to be a kid. Fast forward to after World War II ends in 1945. A complete shift in everything. Because of the war, because of the manufacturing capacity of the country and how it shifted to wartime manufacturing, our economy was now based on war, and the government was the biggest consumer. So you had a captive audience. It wasn't the economy wasn't being driven by individual tastes and, well, does someone like this product over that? No. The government was the economy was being fueled by the government spending money with companies who shifted their manufacturing plants from making couches and whatever into making war supplies for planes and tanks and barracks and whatever it was. And you had a captive customer. Didn't have to advertise. The government needed these supplies. They needed these products. So you made them and you delivered them and they paid for them. And if you were in that business, you made some money. And so coming out of the war, our economy went from its worst depression in its history to its greatest flourishing. Companies and therefore employees of these companies were flush. Companies had made millions of dollars thanks to the war. Yes, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was president. He came up with many depression-aimed plans, the WPA, the New Deal, all these different things to stimulate the economy, to grow jobs, infrastructure, yes. But at the end of the day, it was World War II that got America out of the Depression and made it a world power. Not only a military world power, but also an economic world power. And so then after World War II, there was a burgeoning economy, which meant that families could now begin to take a breather. And they could look around and they had some extra spending money. They had some disposable income. And they could start to maybe pay attention to their kids a little more in terms of their kids' wants. And taking them on vacations and buying them bikes and things like that. Suddenly, it wasn't so dire and bleak. And that's really when there was a beginning of a shift in terms of the culture and the economy being turned toward young people. It wasn't really solidified, though, I don't think, until the 80s, really. The 70s, certainly, there was extravagance. There was spoiled kids and things like that. But then in the 80s, we had another economic boom. Don't forget, the 70s were tough, too. Everybody thinks about, oh, the 70s were so cool. 70s were a tough time. You still had Vietnam War. You had high inflation. You had unemployment. You had Watergate. It was a very turbulent time. But in the mid-80s, the economy turned around, and we were again in another kind of World War II, post-World War II economic flourishing. It was the birth of the yuppies. And then that's when the youth culture really took over our culture in terms of who companies were beginning to design products for, who advertising companies were advertising toward, young people. Started in the late 70s, it took hold in the 80s. And I would argue that a great part of that was not only just rock and roll music. We always hear about Elvis and, of course, the Beatles. And then rock music really took over in the 70s. But it was the 80s where suddenly the baby boomer generation came of age. They were now in positions of power. They were in their early to mid-30s. They were getting jobs, rising up the corporate ladder. They were making money. The economy was booming. That's where the term yuppie came from. Young upward professionals. That's what a yuppie means. I don't know if you ever know that, but that's what a yuppie stood for. A young upward professional. We always have names for people, right? We have millennials and Gen Zs and baby boomers. Well, that was what yuppie meant. A young upwardly mobile professional. In their 20s and 30s, at that time, making $40,000, $50,000 a year was huge. That's when all of a sudden everybody, the stereotype of the BMW and the nice car and the nice house and everything like that. And once again, when a household has disposable income, it will indulge its child, its children. That's natural for any parent. I said the first 45 years of the 1900s, families couldn't indulge their kids. They didn't have the means. They didn't have the disposable income. But right after World War II, in the mid 40s and early 50s, the economy was just on fire, and it happened again in the 80s, and that's when things started to turn and take hold. And since the 80s, it hasn't really stopped. You know, in the 70s, we saw technology moving ahead, you know, with toys aimed at kids, video games. It was a youth-oriented culture now. Before that, it was an adult-oriented culture. The music, the films, the entertainment, the world in general was viewed and aimed at an adult perspective. But over the last 40 years, and I can even argue the last 50 years almost, that has changed. No question about it. Now, if you've been growing up in the last 10 or 15 years, you don't understand that what you think is cool, if you're a young person, is cool. There was a while there where in the 60s and 70s when you were, and even the early 80s when you were young, the transition was in place, but it hadn't taken hold yet. And that's where the generation gap came in. The younger generation saying, hey, this is what we like. This is cool. And the old guard, the older generation saying, well, that's frivolous. That's stupid. That's dumb. This is the way it's supposed to be. It's the way it's always been. And the youth then in the 60s and 70s said, no, it's time to change that. What the definition of normal is. There was always a sense of normality in older generations. This is correct. This is normal. At the end of the day, if you look at what the 60s and 70s did, it crushed the previous definition of normal. Normal was very important to the older generations. Being normal, fitting in. People were very concerned about what other people thought of them. People did not want to stand out. People wanted to be the same. They wanted to blend in. Part of that may have come from the huge influx of immigrants in the 1800s and wanting to be acclimated to becoming American. But whatever the cause was, this country, our culture, was based on normal. Accepted. Worried about what your next door neighbor thought of you. That was top of the mind in the way people acted and what they did. It was very repressive. It made for some really bad decisions that people made that had huge emotional implications on people. This idea of sticking to some normal standard meant that if something fell out of that, you would be ostracized from the community. So you tried to make your bad situation seem normal. I'll just use one of an example. If a young teenage girl, for instance, got pregnant in the 50s and 40s, and she wasn't married, even the 60s, even the 70s, and she wasn't married, she oftentimes was sent away out of her neighborhood to stay with family. She's traveling. She got out of the neighborhood to have the baby. It was all about, what will my neighbors think? What will my family think? What will my friends think? There was a big, big, repressive, ominous force of worrying about what was normal and what other people would think. We are so far past that now. Once again, it's difficult for young people to understand that. Today, I mean, we've got kids questioning their genetic sex, their gender, and that's encouraged. I mean, the thought of that wouldn't even have occurred to somebody in the 30s. Even if people were feeling it, they would never express it. That's why it's not, you know, I feel sorry for people that have been canceled in this culture, because the people who are canceling people are being very unfair. They are setting people up to a standard that never existed. They're setting up people to a standard that has never existed. You cannot take people out of their times and judge them by current standards when they did something in the past, because the past had a different perspective. You shouldn't punish people for acting or thinking in maybe a specific way, because that was the way the culture moved. We should be happy that 30 or 40 years later, when we look back, or hundreds of years later, we say, oh my gosh, look at how barbaric that was. Look how crippling that was. But we should look back and say, thankfully, we have progressed as a society. Because I got news for you. The way those people who are canceling people and deciding what's right and wrong on this moral high ground that they've taken, they will be judged in 50 years of how barbaric they were. They will not be viewed as so progressive and liberal-minded and open-minded. They will be viewed as, because in 50 or 100 years, things will be farther progressed. And what we're doing today will seem barbaric, just as what happened 100 years ago seems barbaric. Learn your history. It will help you in your current and your future. What I'm getting to, ultimately, once again, a nice little detour, but I think worth the history lesson, perhaps. Hopefully, you think so. It's hard for kids today to understand that we lived in an adult focused culture and not a young person's focused culture. But we did for many years, not that long ago. 50 years sounds like a long time ago, but it really wasn't. But I would say in the mid-70s, 20 years after Elvis Presley, 10 years after the Beatles, those influences certainly began to chip away at cultural norms. But then, out of nowhere, suddenly everything shifted and it never shifted back. And that's the difference. What would happen? Yes, there would always be little trends and fads and of the youth culture in the past. But then they would fade away and the adult-oriented society would again take over. There's always been youthful trends and things going on in the future, yes. But then, you know, we had the Roaring Twenties, the Jazz Age. But then the Depression took care of that. You had in the 30s and 40s, the big band era, the Bobby Soxers with Frank Sinatra. And then World War II happened and the shift came back to being more serious. You had Elvis with rock and roll, dominating television, Ed Sullivan Show, Elvis Presley. And then Elvis got drafted. And the shift went back to more respectable and accepted music. Rock and roll took a back seat. It was still around, but it wasn't as prominent. That's what gave, when Elvis went to the army, and I think that was actually a government thing. I think that was a government initiative because they were worried about the influence Elvis Presley had. I believe he was deliberately drafted to get him out of the public eye because they were afraid of the Elvis Presley influence on the youth of the country. I believe that. And it worked. When Elvis left, music then became very adult-oriented again, very safe. And you had popularity of singers like from Pat Boone and Frankie Avalon and Fabian. And those were the new singers of the day. And then what really rocked the boat, and it was moving that way, Bobby Vinton, you know, the American culture had been, you know, those who were the purveyors of the American culture, they were pretty happy that Elvis had kind of drifted away and they got back to what they felt was, wholesome entertainment, wholesomeness, normalcy. I told you, very important. But they got thrown a curveball. While they were worried and they were spending so much attention worrying about what was going on in the United States and keeping America's youth curtailed and in their place, more normal, if you will, away from the bad influences of rock and roll, the American culture police, if you will, of the late 50s and early 60s didn't see something going on in Liverpool. Namely, the Beatles. And you could really point to February 1964, February 7th, in fact, when the Beatles landed here, that was forever the end and the change of an adult-oriented culture to a youth-oriented culture. It didn't happen overnight, per se. Certainly, the revolution started, but the seed was planted. It was a seed that continued to grow. In past decades, the seed grew and it was killed. It was extinguished. The seed that the Beatles planted in 1964 continued to grow and blossom to where we are today. The Elvis seed was destroyed. The Frank Sinatra seed of the Baby Boxers was by the the Bobby Soxers was destroyed. The seed that was planted in the 20s with the Roaring 20s and the Charleston and the Jazz Age was destroyed. It was planted, but it never fully blossomed. But the seed the Beatles planted took hold, and now it is a mighty sequoia. But it didn't take hold until, I would say, the 70s and then certainly the 80s. And what really changed things from a mainstream cultural perspective was something that no one ever expected. Once again, it comes out of nowhere. And it was the movie Jaws in 1975. Directed by Steven Spielberg, based on a film or a book by Peter Benchley. Book was a popular book, but there's nothing like the visual. I've talked about that many times. Steven Spielberg made a film that scared the hell out of people in the summer of 1975. It was a viable threat because we all swam in the ocean at times. We all went to the beach. It was a good story. It was a scary story. It was a real story. And it took America by storm. It made millions of dollars. No one expected it to be the hit that it was. And it changed the way Hollywood began to make movies and view the movie world. Because even though the film itself still had adult characters in it, there was a childlike perspective to Jaws, as in most of Steven Spielberg's films. And many of the victims were kids, and many of the drama revolved around young people, kids at the beach, Brody's family. And it was kids and adults who were going to see Jaws. And the millions that Jaws made opened up Hollywood's eyes for the first time. They had made kids' films. But it was still a business that was dominated by adult-driven stories and movies, no question. But Jaws was that first tent. They call that a tentpole film, bringing in everybody. It wasn't just adults now. It was kids. Kids suddenly had some buying power. They had some clout in the family. Mom and Dad, I want to go see this movie. And Mom and Dad wanted to see that movie too. It wasn't just movies there was just Disney movies for kids and then all the other movies for adults. That's the way the world was. It was very segmented. Disney cartoons for kids, and then the major movies were all adult-oriented. Jaws changed all that. And right on the heels of Jaws comes Star Wars. And then it's changed forever. Now you've got young kids and teenagers and even kids in their 20s who are standing out in line for days to see this film. And it's making billions and millions, and Hollywood goes, wait a minute, there's a youth market that we haven't, that maybe we haven't, either we haven't served or didn't exist. But the fact is, it exists now, and we got to serve it. And so pretty much since 1975, certainly after 1977 in Star Wars, Hollywood has been serving the youth market. And when do kids have time to go to see movies? In the summer, from June to August, before school starts. They can go see movies at noon or at 2 in the afternoon, it's whatever. And so Jaws came out in the summer. It was a summer movie about summer. It came out in the summer. Star Wars And suddenly Hollywood said, well, if we're going to aim these, we're going to make movies that are aimed at young people, then we've got to release them at a time when they are most able to see them. Not in the winter, in the summer when they're out of school. They could see the movie 7 days a week if they wanted to, if they like it that much. They could see it 3 times a day if they want to. Their days are wide open in the summer. And thus, the birth of not only the tentpole movie and the franchise movie, Star Wars then gives birth to The Empire Strikes Back and The Return of the Jedi and all the other different films. There was a Jaws 1, and then there was a Jaws 2, and then there was a Jaws 3, and a Jaws 4, I believe. So Jaws started it. There's always been sequels, but these were different kinds of sequels. These were franchises that were mass appeal oriented at kids, at a youth-oriented subject matter. Things that kids can relate to, not adults. Now, some of them had that appeal to adults, no question, but the stories were suddenly getting focused on the kids and their problems. As I said before, the perspective of children in the family and their role in the family changed after World War II. Not only were they indulged financially because their parents had more money, but their parents had more time. They weren't working 17-hour days in sweatshops like they were in the 20s and 30s. They had more time to spend with their kids. And there was more exploration about emotional things and friendships and all that we take for granted today started back then, in about 50 years ago, where films started to look at kids' lives and kids' problems. Those were never taken seriously. They were viewed as a part of growing up and whatever. They'll grow out of it. Don't worry. The goal in our society for centuries was for children to become adults as soon as they could. Many times parents had big families in order to create more people to work, to bring in money. People don't realize it. There was in the 30s and 40s and 50s, many kids had dropped out of school, even grammar school, to work, to bring in food and bring in money for their families, to afford basic necessities. You're talking about a college dropout? There were grammar school dropouts who were forced to leave school in 5th, 6th, 7th grade when they were 10, 12 years old to help support their family. That was the role of a kid. It wasn't like it is today. All the indulgence, all the attention. Kids were basically looked at as adults in waiting. And sometimes their childhoods were cut even shorter than the average. As I said, by 12, kids were dropping out of grammar school to support their kids. But in 1975, with the release of Jaws, the movie business changed forever. And now here we are 50 years later, and we see that there's going to be another change again, because right now Hollywood doesn't know what to do. They don't know what kind of movies to make. They don't know who to make them for. They don't know where to show them. And I'll tell you something. I miss the summer movies. Not movies about summer. Sometimes they coincided, but the summer movie season. Certainly as when I was a teenager and in my 20s and 30s, and I've been a movie fan forever, I always looked forward to the summer season of movies. They always, the studios banked on, that's when they made their blockbusters, their action films, their big comedies. Their bigger than life kind of Jaws, Star Wars, special effects, science fiction, Ghostbusters, those movies all came out in summer, aimed at the youth market. And it used to make the summer exciting and fun, regardless if you were 10 or you were 40. If you're a movie fan, you couldn't wait to go. It seems like summer goes fast now because not much is really happening like that. I mean, a summer blockbuster, you'd wait for it. You would know what movies every weekend. You'd know which big movie was coming out. The Batman movie's coming out, followed by this, followed by that, followed by Star Wars. I mean, boom, 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 boom. Every weekend, a big movie was going to open. We had a taste of that last summer for the first time in a long time. And if you look, if you compare last summer to this summer, it's 180 degrees difference. Last summer we had Barbie and Oppenheimer, right? Boppenheimer. Barbenheimer. Boppenheimer. Barbenheimer, right? You had a movie aimed at young people, at young women, fun, frivolous, silly, kind of big color, summer fun movie. And then you had Oppenheimer aimed at adults about nuclear bomb, the creation of a nuclear bomb. And you had those two movies. Couldn't be any more different in subject matter, in tone, in visual, but they appealed to both sides. And it was kind of fun last summer. There was an energy and an excitement. Here we are, it's July 1st. You tell me what the biggest movie of the summer is. I don't know. Is it Inside Out 2? If it is that the biggest movie of the summer? Is that on the par of The Empire Strikes Back? Is that on the par of Jaws? Is that on the par of Caddyshack or Back to the Future or Ghostbusters or Ferris Bueller's Day Off or Independence Day or Clueless or Stand By Me or Top Gun or Raiders of the Lost Ark or Jurassic Park or the Harry Potter films? No way. Where are they? What happened to the summer blockbuster? What happened to the summer excitement? It's gone. We had a taste of it, but Hollywood wasn't. The problem was, people said, "Well, you know, Hollywood dropped the ball after last summer." Well, they didn't really drop the ball because they didn't really expect that to happen. That was such a fluke. It wasn't even their doing. That Barbenheimer kind of phenomenon happened organically. That phrase, that it wasn't even created by a Hollywood marketing team. It was created by somebody online or some reviewer. So they didn't really plan for that. Now, yes, this summer there are some big name movies. There's the Deadpool and the Wolverine. There's some big sci-fi movies coming out. I understand that. But it used to be every weekend there was another major movie that you wanted to see, that you had to see. I mean, I'm looking at this list that I made. I just went through some of the biggest movies that were released in the summer seasons. I read you off a few of those names. Think of those names. I mean, those are movies that still elicit excitement today. And I'm looking at the movies for 2024, the summer, and whatever. Because of streaming and the pandemic and streaming, the perfect storm, theaters and Hollywood, they don't know what to do. They don't know what the audience is. They don't know where the audience is. They don't know why the audience is. We are so fragmented now. I'll never forget in the summer when Back to the Future came out. That really was, Ghostbusters, Back to the Future, Dirty Dancing, those mid-80s, Ferris Bueller, those mid-80s movies is when really the summer movie season became changed forever again. Like I said, in the 70s, thanks to Jaws and Star Wars and things like that, the trend moved that way. And it continued to move that way. Blues Brothers came out in 1980. Caddyshack came out in 83. But then in 84 and 85 and 86, you had all the John Hughes films. Like I said, Ferris Bueller. And you had Ghostbusters in 84, which was not only a big hit movie, but it had a number one song. And you had Back to the Future, which had a number one soundtrack. There was this new combination of movies and soundtracks. Dirty Dancing became an entity and a revenue stream unto itself. It was a number, Footloose, another one. It was a number one album. It was a number one movie. And they even had a concert tour bringing back all the groups that were on the soundtrack to see those groups perform. The Big Chill was like that too. Not as extensive, but Dirty Dancing became a huge entertainment entity. And that's what happened because of MTV as well. You had this new platform where you could sell a movie visually and then sell the music visually as too. As I said, we are a visual society. If you could sell music visually, you printed up money. And that's just what happened. And then you started this new idea of cross-promoting things. Movies, sound, the soundtracks now became just as important and just as popular as the films themselves. You started to look forward to what was the soundtrack for the movie going to be because of MTV and the cross-promotional opportunities to sell music visually. You can make the song from a movie now would be on MTV and it would include clips of the movie. So not only did you have a commercial that on television that you paid for to show clips from the movie, come and see this on May 25th, but now 24 hours you had the hit song from that movie featuring clips from that movie on MTV for free that people were just watching. It was a perfect storm. And it solidified the summer blockbuster, the summer movie season. And that continued for 35 years. And then in the last, 15 or, I think Iron Man came out in 2008, the first one. And that started the whole superhero genre domination of Hollywood. Yes, there have been the first Batman started it. Even you can argue Superman did, but really Batman in 1989 with Michael Keaton started this whole thing, but it really wasn't until Iron Man where then suddenly the computer graphics made everything so possible and so real that these comic book heroes and their super strength and their superpowers could now really come to life thanks to the computer generated images. And so for the last 15 years, the superhero movie has dominated, which now we're seeing there's superhero fatigue. How many Spider-Man origin movies can we make? The well has run dry, and as in most cases, the studios didn't have anything in development. They just kept following the trend until they burned it down, until they burned it out. They didn't have a bench ready. So when this finally fades, we have the new thing to come in. Then the pandemic hits, and then everybody's watching streaming movies at home, and suddenly no one's going to theaters, and it's almost 5 years, it's 4 years later, and they're still having problems getting people to get to theaters. Yes, people go to the theaters when there's a Top Gun based on an 80s movie, thank you very much, or a Mission Impossible movie, or a Barbie movie and things like that. Yes, people still will go to the theaters to enjoy it on the big screen, but that used to be the only place they would go, the only place they could go. To see those films in a theater, it was exclusive. That exclusivity is gone. Like, so much exclusivity is gone in this multi-platinum world or platform world. And so that exciting summer movie season is gone. And I'm feeling it more this year just because, I mean, it's been happening for a while. But when you saw the excitement that was created by Barbie and Oppenheimer last year, and as I said, even the Top Gun sequel and the Mission Impossible sequel, although that didn't do as well as people thought, there was an excitement again. And you thought, well, hey, maybe that summer blockbuster, summer season thing is on its way back. But we look at 2024 and I'm not seeing it. I'm not feeling it. Yeah, I'm older. I get that. But I'm a movie fan. If you make something worth, I'll go see it. I'll still go see it. Maybe not with the intensity that I did, you know, when I was in my mid-20s or in my teens, but I'll still go see it. I still love movies. But I'm looking around and I'm not feeling it, man. I'm not getting the vibe, man. Summer 2024, it's already a month. And by now, in the 80s and 90s, Independence Day, remember you saw that visual of the White House blowing up? Oh, my God. Clueless, Stand By Me, Sandlot. So many movies. Raiders of the Lost Ark. Oh, my gosh. The first one especially. Oh, changed things. That was a vibe. There was an excitement. People couldn't wait to get in those movies. People were screaming and cheering. And now that excitement isn't there, and it's for a variety of reasons. Hollywood has lost sight. They gave up on a major part of the audience. They decided to just make all these superhero movies, and they forgot how to make rom-coms and serious movies and everything else, because that's where the money was. They didn't have a bench. They didn't have a diverse set of films and topics to play to various audiences. And once the fatigue of the superhero movie set in, there's nothing left. And they're scrambling. And they don't know what to do. You could feel it, you could sense it. They're right now treading water. They're hoping and waiting for the next best thing, the new big thing to come out of nowhere. But someone's got to make that thing. And nobody really knows where or what it is. But all I know is, for the last 45 or even 50 years, you couldn't wait for the summer blockbuster season to come. The first 4 weeks, from Memorial Day weekend to Labor Day weekend, almost every week there was a new blockbuster movie. And we've just lost that now, sadly. We're not seeing any blockbuster movies. Even the movies that are considered blockbusters aren't true blockbusters, aside from last summer. Last summer kind of... Well, I enjoyed all the excitement about the movie world. Now it depresses me because it's gone, and this summer is so flat compared to last summer, the excitement, that now you realize an era has ended, and hopefully Hollywood, there's somebody in Hollywood, there's some studio executive, there's some artistic person that has a vision and gets that vision funded, and they figure it out. And they reestablish the movie business, because it is in complete disarray. But for those of us who grew up during the golden years of the summer blockbuster, when you were a teenager and you're a young kid, or a teenager, or in your early 20s, and as I said, you went to the movie theaters in the summer, when you're out of school and you saw Jaws and you saw Grease and you saw Dirty Dancing and you saw Ghostbusters and you saw Caddyshack and you saw Stripes and you saw the Blues Brothers and you saw Ferris Bueller and you saw Do the Right Thing and you saw, as I said, Iron Man and the Avengers and the Harry Potter movies and Jurassic Park and the Batman and the Dark Knight and Raiders of the Lost Ark and all the Star Wars films, all those kind of movies, Back to the Future, week after week after week, you couldn't wait to see a movie. It helped make the summer. Yes, the weather will always be warm. Yes, there will always be baseball, but we're missing something now. The summer blockbuster season. It takes a little away from the fun of summer. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 423. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.